Greetings, everyone. Falcho Rash. Welcome back. So, how's the camera? Oh, maybe slightly higher, shall we? Oh, yeah, that'll be fine. So, episode 101, going to talk about basically the basics of what I think should happen in Ireland, which is basically what I think should happen in every country. And so, I am running for office in Ireland. And like I mentioned in the previous episode, trying to just shift the conversation, the discourse, onto what's actually important. Because the best defense mechanism, if you're up to some nefarious or stupid business, is to shift attention onto what doesn't matter. You're having an argument, someone's, married couple having an argument, one of them's done something wrong. They try to shift it to like something that's irrelevant, So that's kind of a big thing, that the status quo uses to defend itself. So my main thing is just like, even if I don't get voted in, just get people thinking about the real things actually need to get sorted out and or at least be talked about. And so that's pretty easily done, just talk to people. And so then hopefully, we can actually build a movement, whether it's me or whether it's other people, it doesn't really matter, It's just like I think we're at a point where actually the theory that, politics is a mess, but you can leave it be, basically it's always there, it's more or less the same thing. That's actually been proven wrong in recent history. The whole COVID thing, it's like, and all the evidence that of these people, the same people who kind of put all this stuff forward, they're making it very clear they're preparing for the next thing. And basically, it's like Poland 1938. You might think like, oh, things are basically be, the same. Yeah, it's a little messy, but So actually, no, everything's about to change unless you do something. And so I think we have a, I'm not saying it's exactly the same situation, but I think, like, yeah, it's a pretty messy situation. And I think the universe is calling upon all of us to kind of think more and become more aware. Which is the basically all we need to do really is become more aware, and especially like spiritual awakening, like full on, like awareness of who you are, who I am. So being able to observe your own mind and kind of question your own narratives, and not identify as any image or idea or like, oh, here I am, this is me, and I am, this is my history, and this is who I am, and be like, well, no, just, to be able to just be in the present moment, connected with life and other people, and not need to define yourself through words, just be here. So, we'll get into that a bit later, but basically, all we need to do is become more aware. And the real core of it, the root solution, is just a spiritual awareness, you could call it. And then everything, we're laughing, everything's easy. But we're focusing first here on the political awakening, but but that's the core solution, is the spiritual awakening. So basically, I'm going to talk a little bit about the basics of what I think Ireland needs, what's wrong, and then what should be done. So very exciting. Here we go. Let's have a sip of tea. First, music, as always. Let's see. What's it? Oh, okay. Here's one to, acknowledge the ancestors. Some people say this song comes from Ireland a long, long time ago. Other people say it comes from Atlantis. but I don't know. That's just the word on the street via my brother. I don't know where he got that, suggestion. But other people, it's a Scottish song. But the Scots come from Ireland back in the day anyway. So, but we'll see. I don't know if we'll ever know, but it's a beautiful song about, the passing of time, and also, I guess, the presence of eternity, kind of that paradox, the eternal home and the eternal going forth,
Thank you.
mind, should old acquaintance be forgot, and days of old lang syne, for old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne, we'll take a cup of kindness yet, for days of old lang syne. Okay, I haven't woken my baby. Mission accomplished. Excellent. So, all right. Yeah, all good. Okay. So the basics, basically freedom. We need freedom. We need individual liberty. So, you know, the non-aggression principle is like you can do whatever you want to do in your life. You've complete authority over your own life, liberty, and property. So you can do whatever you want, so long as you don't prevent other people from having the same right. So, you know, if I'm like, yeah, I'll do whatever I want. Okay, I want to eat that sandwich. Oh, but you paid for it, and you know that's your sandwich. Well, then you know you want to eat the sandwich too, right? And you know, obviously, I'm entering into your sphere of authority and freedom. So you know, that's pretty clear. Just if you're not hurting others, you can do whatever you want. That's the basic idea, classical liberalism or libertarianism. And there's some messy areas, you know, around the edges, like, oh, you want to smoke in a restaurant, you know, or let's say you want to smoke walking down the street, and so it's a public street, but then people around you are getting, you know, your smoke. Okay, you know, but you can figure that out, that those things don't tend to be the end of the world anyway. But basically, I think the way I'm presenting, the way I see things, the right way is, I'd love you to tell me, put in the comments if you disagree with something, or if you agree with something, anything that could improve my thinking, please do let me know. I really appreciate that. But yeah, basically, you're free to do whatever you want, so long as you're not, you know, preventing others from enjoying the same freedom. Then, you know, the main, you know, when people interfere with that, they get in trouble with the law, right? You know, or you're stealing, you're hurting someone, or you're assaulting them, or, you know, you're defrauding them. So you're taking their property by deception, you know, whatever it is, you know, murder, you get in trouble, right? The only real problem we're facing these days in like Ireland and the West is the government has too much power, far too much power. And they have just been gradually creeping and getting more and more control. And this has happened all throughout the West, you know. And so you have like the USA, where it was most successful in terms of the American dream, you know, like upward social mobility. Like people came there from Europe, they had nothing, and the government gave them nothing. But it said, like, you look, you keep the fruits of your labors, you know, whatever you work, whatever you can produce on your own, that's yours. You have the right to that, you know. The government had some minimal taxes to, you know, provide for its military and maintain basic, you know, governance structures. But it wasn't in the business of giving you the basics of life. Like, yeah, here's your education, here's your food. It didn't do any of those things. But it didn't tax you to do those things either. So it said, yeah, you know, you can do whatever you want and keep the fruits of your labors. And so, you know, not so good for lazy people, but really good for hardworking people. And people from all over the world went there, and they, you know, their children had a much, much better life than themselves. And even themselves, in their later years, they had a better quality of living than when they arrived. They were able to move upwards, you know, and then their grandchildren had even better, et cetera. And that's now reversed, that process, you know. So this generation is, you know, having a worse quality of life than the previous one. And it's, you know, the projections are it's going to get worse. So, and what happened there? Well, basically in the period when America was most successful, it had the smallest government the world had ever known. It had, you know, courts, police, politicians, bureaucrats, you know, basic bureaucrats, soldiers, you know, the basics of like a government, basically a monopoly on violence, like, and so really all we really need is a force that's going to say, hey, when this person A tries to violate the liberty of person B, this force C, let's call it, the government, intervenes and says, no, you can't do that. And that's basically what America had. And it wasn't perfect, but more or less it had that with a bit of other stuff thrown on or whatever. And it was wildly successful. And then over time, it got more and more of these accoutrements of like socialism, like building on, more and more power and more involvement in the economy and this and that. And then the more that that's happened, it's never benefited the economy and their society. It's always been negative. And that's, in the rest of the world, we never even got to that kind of libertarian extent that the USA got. But a lot of Europe and, Australia, the West in general, did get kind of towards that direction, but in all of these places, it's going the opposite direction. So we've got too much government, government, like, can, you want to start a business and oh, I have an idea for a business. I can help people. I can see a problem where people want or need something, and I think I know how to give it to them. Let me go do that, and then they can give me money. Perfect. Great. The people are solving our problems, without any help from the government. And the government's like, well, hold on there. No problem, but just if you mess up the regulations, you're gonna go to jail, or you have to pay like $100,000 or something. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, let me go look up the regulations. And like, where do I look that up? And oh, looking. Oh, okay. And oh, there's like 1,000 pages of stuff here I have to read. And oh, I don't really understand a lot of this technical vocabulary they're using. And so it turns out like, oh, and then you need lawyers and accountants to kind of help walk you through this stuff, which is very expensive. And then also often you need lawyers and accountants to certify things and do this and get a copy of that made and this and send it to this bureaucracy. And then you have to wait for someone who's can't lose their job. They're just sitting behind a desk on their phone, looking at cat videos or something. And you're waiting for them to approve something and they've got no backlog. And I have a friend who works in one of these bureaucracies and he says they joke about it. They're like, oh, I'm useless, I'm terrible. These persons, he's on the phone asking me, for this thing. And I don't know where it is, but he's so annoying. He's just bossing me around And so in a capitalist system, if you don't give the customer what they want, they don't give you their money. It's like they can walk away. Both parties have freedom to walk away if they want. And so if you're not respectful to the people who you are providing for, they will go to someone else, and then you disappear because you run out of resources. And so and then other people look over their shoulder. They see, oh, that person just disappeared because of that. Oh, cautionary tale. Okay. And so everyone, tries very hard to please the customer, but the government doesn't do that because they don't need to. They don't have that. And naturally, all creatures try to conserve energy. It's a fundamental thing creatures want to do. They want to reproduce. They want food for sustenance, right? They want to reproduce, and they want to conserve energy. So, like, even lightning finds when it's going to Earth, finds the path of least resistance due to like where there's more water vapor or whatever, and conductivity. And so, it goes in these erratic patterns. It's finding the path of least resistance. A river, the same way a river flows. And so human beings do the same thing. And so if you create this structure where there's all these people who don't, they can do whatever they want and they don't get in trouble, they're gonna, generally, most people are going to do kind of an underwhelming job. They won't be that disciplined at working. So anyway, if you want to start a business, you're dealing with these bureaucracies and, God forbid you get annoyed at someone on the phone and then they turn on you and they get nasty and then they sabotage it or whatever. But even if you're being completely disciplined and respectful, it can take forever, So the costs of time and money and just focus and even the limits of like processing power, someone who wants to start like a construction bit, like a basic, bricklaying thing or doing garden features or something, they might not be very academic. And so they could be cut off from starting their business just because of the literacy required to read through and figure out the regulations and figure out who to contact and what you have to do. Whereas if they just got straight to work, they could do a really good job. And so what I'm getting at is that's just one example where government, through regulation, is making it very hard for many businesses to operate. And so we're actually suffering that, even if we don't realize it. That there are so many problems of what people want and what people need, which could be being solved, but the government is in the way because there's all this wall of regulation. Now, I think some minor amount of regulation is reasonable, but basically it should be like You can't just, I don't know, you can't harm people. You can't, if you, basically the extension of what I talked about before, if you're infringing upon someone's liberty, life, liberty, or property, you get in trouble. So it's like, yeah, you do whatever you want there, business. Oh, wait, you're selling poisonous food? Okay, well, you're, attacking people's health, it's their body, fundamental property they have. And maybe their life if you kill them, so or if you disable them or something. So yeah, okay, there's a penalty for that. You go to jail or you pay a huge fine or whatever. Or you're polluting the river. Well, everyone's drinking for the water from that river and they're swimming in the river. And okay, so you are, everyone has a kind of shared ownership of these local resources. The people of whatever Athlone, they have a certain ownership over that area and the amenities, and so if you're, poisoning the river, then you have to deal with, face the consequences with the people. So basic regulation, but like what we have is so, like you could spend your whole life, you could be a professionally trained lawyer and spend your whole life trying to read all the regulations just in Ireland, and you won't be able to. There's like millions of pages, and do we really need that, Here's the thing, the basic regulation we need is just capitalism, the free market. So what happens is, let's say I open a clinic to, give people healthcare, and if I am doing a bad job, people come to me, they give me some money, I do a bad job because I'm being lazy or I'm just not, I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe you might think you need regulation or you get people who, it's dangerous, they don't know what they're doing. Okay, if I don't know what I'm doing and I dare get involved in a creating a clinic, putting all that my energy into something when I'm not really prepared for it. Some people will do that, but most won't, but some do. Then people don't come back to me. And they also tell their friends, hey, avoid that, clinic over there. It's not good. Go to this other one. I went there, it was better. And so over time I start to get fewer and fewer customers. And I disappear. I go bankrupt. Problem solved. You don't need a government bureaucracy, hoping that they'll actually do their jobs when they can't get fired. You're drawing on salaries, having overheads like electricity, rent, cars or email systems and all this stuff. Overseers and overseers for the overseers and committees and instead of that, just have the free market and just this natural system of reciprocity and oh, if you don't give, you won't be given to, and so, or if you give poorly, you will be, you won't be, you get these relationships and you won't thrive. So, and then if in the more extreme case where, say, I have a clinic and I hurt someone from negligence because I don't know what I'm doing, I should know, but I don't, or even intentionally because I'm crazy, I try to kill people or whatever, okay? Any of these situations, okay, you're infringing upon life, liberty, or property, you get in trouble. What's the big deal? It's like, okay, you have a clinic and you're negligent and you kill someone. That's obviously a tragedy, but that could happen. That does happen in even these hyper-regulated public hospitals and hyper-regulated private hospitals, so-called private, given the government's deeply involved these days, And in fact, I think because there's in the public ones, because people can't get fired, it's actually, in a way, it's more likely to happen. Because people feel like, oh, they can blame it. Or they could, these huge bureaucracies, they can obscure the cause of it. Whereas, like a capitalist system, it's like these small clinics. Maybe some are bigger hospitals, but many doctors who work in a hospital might go, like, I'm just going to start a clinic and help people in the community. That sounds easy. It's I can manage it. I can't manage a whole hospital, and I'm tired of this bureaucracy. I'm just going to. I have all the skills. I'm just going to. Me and my buddy, this administrator from the hospital, we made a deal. We split it 50-50. We're going to start our own little clinic. Or maybe someone who's just on their own. They've just paid attention to what the administrators do. They've got the basic ideas. Okay, I'm a doctor. I'm just going to go start my own clinic. If they harm someone, they know they're going to get in big trouble. So they try to avoid doing it. And if it does happen, they get in trouble and that person's now out of the market, gone. But the vast majority of the time, that won't happen. And there would be warning signs, So now, if you want, you could add on there some inspectors going around, but you have to be careful about how that's done, that doesn't become. Again, without the discipline of the market, it's very hard to control, make sure people are actually doing their jobs and that they're not just becoming tyrants and, trying to wield their power and, yeah, give me more paperwork and blah, 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 blah. And, So there's a basic example. That's regulation. Okay. So the kind of three ways the government is too involved in our lives. And this is the basic thing. I'm going to go through the kind of my policies with Gaelic Awakening, my political party, in a moment. But basically, the three things, like one of my main policies, or things that I want to be the policies, anyone can put forward in Ireland and in the world, any country, is reducing taxation, regulation, and government spending by like about 80%, like massively reducing it. So taxation, we're way overtaxed, like the government takes all this money from us with one hand and then gives it back with the other, via redistributing, putting into education, putting into healthcare, putting into roads or whatever. But it's taking from us with one hand, giving back to the other with the other. And in the process, it wastes a lot of it on bureaucracy, on mistakes, on people who aren't doing their job properly, on corruption in some cases, and at the end of the day, the people who are building the stuff, they're private companies anyway. The government's not like a road building entity. It doesn't know how to do that. So we could just let the free market do these things. And it might seem a bit weird because we're not used to it. Just like the communists might think, oh, capitalism, we couldn't do that here. But then look at all these communist countries. They embrace capitalism and they're much, much better. Billions of people, well, at least 1 billion people have come out of poverty because of like introducing property rights and market forces in the last few decades, Whereas, communism, they're always like, just give us one more chance and we'll make it work. It never worked because the whole world was, putting pressure on us. And it's like, well, the USA worked and the whole world was putting pressure on them. There's all these European royal dynasties putting insane pressure on the USA, trying to stop it because they thought it was dangerous. Because, hey, they're like, this is freedom. That's not good. What if that spreads to our countries? They were putting a lot of pressure on it and it didn't stop it, So the thing is, what works is actually will work even under pressure. But anyway, so regulation down by 80%, like we were talking about here. We don't need it. Just have minimalist regulation. Taxation down by 80%. Remove the income tax, and basically, say, if we don't have to pay all these taxes, we won't need all these government services. So that's the third thing. Reduce government services by 80%. Most of them, basically these things, we think they're free, but no, we're paying for them through our taxes. And basically, the way, just for the reasons I've just been explaining, we're getting a lower quality product or service for a higher price because there's not that natural discipline of competition and the threat of bankruptcy. So this is the overall picture. Now, I wouldn't want that to happen like overnight, but within a decade, we can do that, and this is what Milei is already doing in Argentina, and it's been done in the USA. It's been done in many countries where wherever market forces are in a balanced way brought in, success follows. In Ireland, we did this for big corporations, and it, benefited the economy even to some extent, although there's now a two-tier economy where if you're connected to the government or these big, multinational corporations or NGOs or whatever, then you can afford all these things. You get these big wages, but because there's these huge tax breaks for the corporations to be based in Ireland. But then the normal people, there's all that money in the economy driving up prices, but we don't have those incomes. And so then now we are kind of like second-class citizens in our own country. What if we make 12.5, a good start would be 12.5% tax on corporations. Oh, that's pretty good. Let's make that for everyone. For, the what why should a corporation get that? But, your man on the street who's 60 years old and still working and just, hustling just to get along. Why can't he have 12.5%, tax? Does that seem reasonable? And this idea like, oh, it'll trickle down. It's like, well, look, there's some truth to like, benefiting the if the big companies can be successful, then they can solve problems or what we want and need, and that will benefit everyone. There'll be employment and things, and also more importantly, just they'll be providing products and services which we want and need. That'd be great. But it also works for small, businesses and for individuals. And it's not just it shouldn't it's out of balance if it's only for the big fish. It's got to be for everyone. Also, when you've got the situation we've currently got, it's actually not like even helping the rich doesn't really help the regular people in general. Because it's this kind of oligarchy where the government is heavily, heavily involved in regulating, taxing, and spending in the economy. And so these huge corporations and, very wealthy families and individuals, they understand that they can circumvent the normal process, ruthless process of competition, and get ahead just by connecting, latching into the state system and milking off the bureaucracy. So, doing one of these contracts where the government is spending all this money, it gives it to the private sector to do stuff for them because the government doesn't know how to do all these things. It's a bureaucracy, and so they can be one of these, companies which are getting these easy contracts from this bureaucracy that doesn't can't tell the difference of like how well they're doing and often doesn't care. They'll just throw more money at them if it's not working. So in some cases, you're incentivizing failure and laziness, and so there's a, and you have the possibility through regulation, you have the possibility of, oh, I'll throw a couple million euros at someone's electoral campaign, get them elected, and then wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, you want to help me by passing this regulation I've drafted for you? You don't need to do anything. Just look through it or don't look through it. Just put it forward. That's all I ask, And then, by the way, I'm doing the same to a dozen other politicians, and, they all accept it and go, oh, great idea. Yeah, good stuff. And pat on the back, you're taking the initiative even though you didn't do anything, and things get put forward, and you can bring in regulations which outprice your competitors. Oh yeah, you need to do this to make sure that the customer is getting good value and safe products and services. And meanwhile, the compliance demands of that basically mean a huge percentage of the population cannot enter the market and compete to drive down prices and drive up the quality of the services or products. So you can have people, bringing in regulations which actually are just a cronyism attempt to, prevent or avoid having to compete and provide good value. So that's the situation we're in, where like there's a lot of supermarkets. Like, why are there so few greengrocers? And inflation, the government, central banks printing, God, insane quantities of money, which is basically a hidden tax on your savings. If they add 10% more money to the money supply, that means the value of your bank account just goes down by 10%. And that's inflation. The government controls it. They pretend they're fighting it, but they're doing it. Or more accurately, the central banks are doing it. Where, the jury's a bit out, but it doesn't really seem like they're under government control. It seems like the other way around. But definitely in the USA, that's the case. It seems to be the case in the EU also. So you have this situation where, yeah, the wealthy corporations, they don't really, like if we had 80% less regulation, 80% less tax, 80% less spending, so people would be able to retain their tax money that they're not spending, and okay, I can use this to buy what I need, buy my healthcare, buy my education, buy whatever I need on the free market, and I'll get a higher quality. Just like you wouldn't trust the government to make your phones, your car, your clothes, but somehow we have this idea that they would be good at much more important and complicated things like education and infrastructure and healthcare. It's like actually the evidence is, that's not true. But people, might think, oh, but Margaret Thatcher, in the privatization stuff, that didn't work. It's like, well, yeah, but that was only bringing in like freedom and liberty for the very, very rich. So it was still a socialist system, but you're just selling off assets to your buddies. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about across the board, across all income levels, reducing taxation by 80%, reducing regulation by 80%. Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, they were targeting just the ultra rich with this trickle-down economics thing. They weren't like, oh, let's shrink the size of the government and basically let your greengrocers just, oh, you work at a big supermarket and you know everything about fresh produce, and you actually are on the phone with the suppliers every day, and you want to go do your own thing. Well, you've got some savings. Yeah, you've two of you are doing, and you can split the costs, and you've got some savings. All right. So you start renting a new space, and same suppliers, you get your food there, and maybe you do that and you just start a greengrocer. A lot of people, you will be able to provide, the corporation's providing a bare minimum value to the customer so they can get maximum money for the shareholders. You can provide a better quality, slimmer margins, but it's enough for you and your family, And the people, local people, are like, well, more friendly experience, more human touch, and better value for money. Same thing, but better value for money. Okay, great, I'll go there. And then every industry, this is how it works, So small players, often who were part of these bigger players, and they get the experience and they split off and do their own thing. Or it could be from just they get an education, they can just do it from straight. They start competing, providing a better or even identical, the ratio of, let's say they provide a higher quality or a lower price or some, a better balance of these than the big players. Then, the big players can't force you to give you their money, to give them your money, right? They can't hold a gun to your head except through government regulation, which is what they do, by forcing out the small competitors. But when people are free to just start their own businesses, what happens is the big players start losing market share, and so the small companies, the small greengrocers or healthcare clinics or schools, they start to grow. People give them their money and it's successful and word spreads and then they have more and more money. And then, okay, I'll hire a new teacher and we're getting a bit crowded. Let's hire a new premises just over there. We'll do two schools, split the classes and it starts growing. And the big players, they just start seeing the big companies, they start seeing, oh, our market share is shrinking. We're making more and more customers are going elsewhere. Because it's better value. And then people that start word spreading, people starting to realize that they can be trusted and they're taking a risk and then they're finding out that, yeah, this works, it's good, it's worth it. And then these big companies, they have no choice but to start to compete. So they lower their prices, they raise the quality of their products or services, and then they can stop the bleeding of their market share. But then that's fine. We don't care. You get the small. And then if they drop them so, and this is what, Rockefeller, I think, was it Rockefeller, I think, back in the day was doing with oil, Standard Oil, that lower the price. He bought up, huge amounts of the competition and then raised the prices a lot. I think he had enough market share that he lowered the prices radically, that he could afford, but others couldn't. And then just, kind of drove out the competition and then bought up the competition. And he had, huge cornered the market, almost all of it, and then he jacked up the prices. But then what happened is, and then that ended up bringing these antitrust laws where they were like, okay, break up, split it, you have to split it up, But that was socialism coming in. And actually, what was already happening by that point when they were brought in, the problem was already being solved by the market. It had already begun that his market share had already started to plummet significantly. I forget the numbers, but significantly. Because, other players start going, all right, you're charging, a huge amount of money. I'm going to do the same thing, but for a reasonable price. And all the people, I can't provide it at a large scale, but it's a small scale, but all these people around me, they go to me instead of you, of course, because it's in their self-interest. And so then I get all that money, and then I can expand my operations a bit more, and the cycle repeats. And that was happening all around. And so you have this waveform. Anytime someone tries to create a monopoly in a free market, by, buying up the competition or cutting prices, having price wars, they might gain, market share and raise prices temporarily, but then that just incentivizes other people to start competing with them because there's an opportunity to take over, providing just normal value for money. And that's happened throughout time. That's the way it works. And so the government gets involved in these systems and it just makes everything shit for us, basically. So, okay, so that's the basic gist there of like, this is kind of libertarianism, or you could say classical liberalism, or free market economics, or natural liberty, or natural systems, or Austrian economics. But I'm not an economist, but I'm very interested in these things. I understand the basics. A great guy, Dave Smith, who's got a podcast, Part of the Problem. He does a great job of talking about these issues and how this all works. He's got a great podcast, or on the Joe Rogan podcast, because Joe's often kind of like, but wait a minute, and thinks, socialism kind of makes sense, basically. And so Dave does a great job of kind of, often they have great conversations together. But, well, it's a mighty cactus there. Wow, it's beautiful. Okay, just through the window. Fine cactus. Right. So government is too involved, and if we can, kind of limit government gradually, say within a decade, kind of phase these things out, the services who probably lag a bit longer, you know, keep them a bit longer, just to make sure, give the free market time to develop these alternatives, you know, the clinics, the schools, whatever, because it doesn't just happen immediately. We're going to be, you know, in a much better position. And then we're going to be a leader, a global leader in the world. Not a young global leader, but just, you know, and again, showing the way. Like Ireland, in the, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Ireland, the land of saints and scholars, when the Roman Empire fell, we were the center of learning in Europe, and we relit the lamps of education across the continent. Irish monks were studying Latin and ancient Greek on top of all the, you know, his heritage, native heritage of learning through the Druids and all, you know, our own scholarly pursuits and all that. And then spread that, you know, colonize, you know, Britain and, you know, the continent with these monasteries who spread learning and education and all the benefits economically that has on the society. And, you know, people in Britain used to come to Ireland to finish off their education because there was levels of education you couldn't get in Britain. This is, you know, fido long ago. But anyway, you know, we can play that role again. And I think the core thing is like freedom, saoirse, right? That is such a prized thing in Ireland because we were deprived of it for so long and still are deprived of it. North and south, you know. We've never been completely free since colonialism began, you know. And you could say, you know, even in the past, you know, sure, we're never totally free. There's always, you know, some rogue druid up to no good, or, you know, some king's doing this or that, you know. But yeah, we had a very significant level of freedom in the past. It was a very decentralized tribal system. And yet it was a very well, Ireland's a very wealthy society, a very advanced and sophisticated society. And a lot of the whole thing of, oh, where would we be without the British? Yeah, they did some bad things, but come on, look, they created the county system, they did this, that. It's like, yeah, but you know, we wouldn't have just done nothing if we stayed Gaelic, you know, native ways. Like, you know, the British weren't like that back when they, you know, started colonizing us. Things grow. We, God only knows what we would have created on our own. But very likely it would have been better without all that trauma and, you know, division and warfare and just, you know, horror. So we've learned the value of liberty. And so I think we have, and yet we have the traditions of, you know, European Enlightenment culture, to understand the benefits of limited government, et cetera, and democracy. And so we have this balance where we are uniquely placed, I feel, that the people know, hey, no, haha. Yeah, white privilege. We were genocided by the British. Like, you know, and hey, I love the British too. No problems here. But like, you know, the British state and the royal family, you know, at that time at least, you know, were, you know, that's kind of, they were into that. They it was genocide by omission. There was enough food, and they had, the food was coming off land which they had just seized from the native Irish a few generations earlier, and yet they were killing people who were, you know, eating oysters from the Queen's ocean or whatever, you know, or like, you know, fishing from, you know, the Queen's seas, river or whatever, you know, and not allowing, you know, even, okay, discounted sale of corn to these, but, you know, but they, and the Prime Minister intentionally said, you know, said is on quoted saying, you know, maybe this is a gift from God, you know, because there's all these Irish speaking, you know, rebellious Irish who are disproportionately affected by the famine. Well, oh, maybe it's God's trying to, maybe we'll just let God do what he has to do here to help us. Anyway, point is, Ireland's like, look, we're not, we don't have this guilt. Well, we have a lot of guilt, but you know, we shouldn't. You know, it's been a bunch of, you know, gaslighting for eons through, you know, but colonialism and then the Catholic Church, you know, bad players taking power and pushing that, the wise, beautiful message of Jesus in a very dark direction to for social control. And then, you know, you've got the whole creeping oligarchy, you know, with the EU and USA influences and all that, you know, and the modern NGOs, all that. So plenty of guilt, but, you know, actually we shouldn't be guilty. And we haven't committed these atrocities that other countries have, which can get them conflicted and kind of are able to be manipulated. So, but Ireland, we have fought for liberty for a very long time. We appreciate it. We understand the importance of it. And that's what's needed to reset the West and preserve freedom. And so we can kind of lead in this way and inspire the rest of Europe and the West and even the whole planet to kind of follow this way. Don't go the way of China, even though it might look somewhat appealing, but no, go the way of Ireland, as we could be if we want. So that's the basic thing, right? Individual freedom, individualism, not collectivism. You can't just sacrifice the individual for the so-called benefit of the greater good. It's like the greatest good is the good of the individual, because society is a bunch of individuals and families. But you can't, there's this ideology of like, yeah, well, you got to crack a few eggs to make an omelet. It's like, look, hey, you can't do that. Like, the individual is sacred, as Jesus said, or as the Buddha said, as many people say, anyone who's paying attention, like, look, you are free to do whatever you want to do if you're not hurting others. That's it, and we need a government that finally respects that. So, okay, that's the basic overall picture here. Now, I could go in two directions. One, I could just lay out the policies of the party here. The other, go into the whole, the root of this, which is spiritual kind of awakening. So I'm going to go the policies and then look through the basic policies of the party. Going to go through this more in future episodes. And then also briefly have a look at, I guess, the overall, the kind of deeper level to what I am encouraging people do here. Because this is basically talking about the political awakening, right? The awareness of like, oh, what is happening to us and what should be happening and how can we get from here to there, right? Where are we? Where do we want to be? How can we get from here to there, right? That's simple. And so yeah, let's get into that. So first of all, Ivarahane. Okay. If you're interested, if you know someone who's interested, you could help support me. My money making here, Renaissance Network, Renaissance Network, if you will. So this is my school. I run like alternative education, basically. But this is like an impromptu plug here. But basically, life coaching. I've had a lot of problems in the past that I was able to overcome. Basically, because I had no choice. Like, oh, I'm not going to be miserable. I better figure out what's going on. And, I'm not perfect, obviously, but like, I've overcome a lot. And so, there's a huge n number of people who I could help. And if you have a bit of dosh, a bit of money, well, there's one free class, one free hour for all of these. So, there's 4 free hours available because I have 4 things I offer. Life coaching, polymath program, English fluency, and school tutoring. But say life coaching, if you feel like you're a bit stuck, or basically I'll help you identify your challenges and your opportunities and kind of understand the options for moving forward. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I will ask good questions and I will give you potential suggestions. But at the end of the day, you know best. And so, but I can be a guide and help in that way. I had a lot of people who kind of said to me, like, Jamie, oh, you could kind of do like that kind of thing, say in my English teaching, which I've mainly been doing. So I'm branching out into this. So I'd love to help you if anyone, even take the free hour, there's no pressure. If you don't want to just take an hour of my time, cool. But then maybe if you enjoy it, you could tell someone that then we're even. That'd be cool, Polymath program, basically 7 aspects of, 7 domains of skill and knowledge, basically to make you a Renaissance man or Renaissance woman. So I'll give you the basics of these 7 domains, and then you can, through self-study, build upon them. So we've got health, philosophy, literacy, numeracy, music, languages, and history, which includes political, economy. Yeah, so that's it. Now, what else here? Yeah, English fluency. So I'm an English teacher. I've been doing that for like a decade or so, a bit under a decade. And yep, so if you want to, improve your English as a second language, whatever it is, speaking, listening, reading, writing, exam preparation, specific thing, you got a job interview or something, or maybe grammar and vocabulary or whatever it is, or even if you're perfectly fluent, but you just want English for, like say writing skills or that kind of thing. and which is, although that is part, right, of polymath program. And all of these you can pick and choose. You can do choose one and say you're, you know, you've got I don't know, polymath program, right? And then one day you're like, hey, actually I'd like to do a bit of life coaching. All right, cool, no worries, we can just swap and doesn't matter, it's all the same price. So, and then school tutoring, so for your kids, teenagers, you know, like I'm good with kids because I, you know, I don't know, I just like helping kids. Kids are cool. And I've taught a lot of children and teenagers in my time, and often I'd be teaching them English, but then they'd be like, ah, oh, like, how you doing? Oh, I got this math test coming up. I'm like, oh yeah, what is it about? Like, oh, algebra. All right, let's look, get into it. You know, and I'd start tutoring them in basically maths suddenly, you know? So basically you can see there, but all kinds of stuff I could help them with. So if you're interested, that would help me to try to, I'm doing my best to help myself, my family, you know, my country, my planet, the world, you know, my God. And so, and I think you can have all those things together, you know, like what's really, you know, people who are selfish in a toxic way, they're really just not doing it right. You know, they're really just failing to be properly selfish. The proper way to be selfish is where you realize we're all branches on the one big tree of life, and what helps you helps me. And if I try to help myself without hurting, without helping the other branches, if I hurt the other branches in the service of this branch, I'm actually damaging the tree that I am. And so it's ridiculous. So I think it's a win-win. So you can help me help you, help empower me, so I have the finances to kind of help, you know, try to bring balance in whatever way I can, you know, in this political stuff, for example, like shifting the dialogue and the discourse to things that are more important, and getting into power, God willing. All right. So that's about that. We'll now, okay, to the po plug over to the Gaelic Awakening. So you can go to the internet, www.gaelicawakening.ie. Now, you know, basically it's all about awakening, right? Becoming aware of what the truth is. What should we do and what is? Like what exists and what should exist? You know, what should we do? How should we be? And the Gaelic is, you know, to connect us to an understanding. Partly it's connected to like the situation where we're in the world historically, where basically we are faced with this situation where these globalists, these collectivists who are willing to sacrifice many individuals for this supposed greater good, they believe, you know, like, oh, this, you know, educated elite should kind of control things and micromanage the planet. And you can see this in future episodes. I'll be talking about exactly how that's working. But in many institutions, this is, you saw this very clearly with the COVID situation, right? Restricting individual freedoms allegedly to help solve the problem. And yet all they really helped was them to enrich and empower themselves at the terrible expense of the general society. And so, and this is a pattern you see throughout time. And a lot of people have been woken up through the pandemic, and now they're realizing this goes back even much longer before the pandemic, and it will continue if we do not reset things. And you know, there's no need. I don't believe in us against them psychology. I think, you know, these elites or these globalists who are doing these things, and there are, you know, elites in all countries, you know, doing similar things. I think they're human beings too. Often they're very clever and very organized, and so I really respect their discipline and their organization. Kudos. I love them. They're my brothers and sisters, you know. And they are, I believe, you know, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I think even if they think they know what they're doing, I believe that they are not connected to the pure sanity of pure consciousness. I believe if they were aware that, oh, I am the one, there's only one consciousness, the spirit of God, the spirit of the universe, pure awareness, experiencing everything through me as one branch, through my beautiful partner, my child, and as other branches, or my mom, or whatever, you know, or a stranger on the street, or, you know, Jacob Rothschild, or whoever it is, you know, like we're all branches on the same tree, and it's all the one self experiencing itself from countless angles. So try to be humble, try to take care of your own little branch, but try to, we can try to communicate about how we can help the whole tree of life to bloom, but without any animosity, you know. So it's a very important balance. I think if you, what you resist persists, and what you fight, you know, you empower. So I want to just build the new thing to try to encourage these forces who, understandably, they thought, yeah, we'll kind of take power and fix things. So, well, actually, look, you've got some things confused, right? And here's another way to do it. Come help us do this, you know? And so I hope, yeah, we don't need to have some huge conflict over this. So that's an important about, how to do this, the way of peace and love. But anyway, so there's this, kind of conspiracy basically to kind of bring in global government, one go world government, the New World Order, some people call it. And that used to sound crazy, but then it's at the point now where it's actually crazy to assume that that's not possible. At the very minimum, it's plausible. Or if, depending on your reading and your experiences, you might believe it's actually probable or certain. But I would be at the point of saying it's very probable that this is happening. And I'm, open to having my mind changed. But like, it's possible to some explanations that it's less coordinated than it seems, and that I'm just not aware of that information so far. I don't know. There's only so much time in the day, right? But anyway, it doesn't really matter whether this is an intentional or a kind of coincidental accumulation of power into this global governance thing, and even in each nation, just move away from freedom towards more totalitarianism and corporate control, this fusion of corporate power and the state, which is fascism, technically speaking, where the government can kind of control the individual and sacrifice them to the greater good. While laughing all the way to the bank. So the solution to this is individual freedom, but also kind of national freedom, which we could call sovereignty. So it's kind of like a higher octave of the individual liberty, then the national liberty is what we call sovereignty. So the sovereignty of Ireland. And we need that at this time in history. And this is why it's Gaelic awakening for us. Because we need to rally around the idea of the nation state and say, look, it's great to participate in global stuff and the EU and the WHO or whatever, if they're reasonable. So far, currently, they're not being reasonable at all. There's a good argument for leaving, but hopefully, we can reform them. That would be easier. But we're not ready. It's not safe right now to just bring in a global government because it's going to be a fascist dictatorship. It's not going to be good. It's going to be like China, right? Which is communist on paper. But actually, it's technically it would be fascism because it's basically the state. It's a market forces are allowed to function. You can have property, and run businesses and stuff. But the government is free to just go shoot people in the head or take over businesses or run businesses themselves and whatever. And there's no rule of law for the government. So that's fascism, right? As it was Mussolini brought it in. Nazism is where the racist element gets added in, but that's a more specific thing. So we don't want global fascism, right? So okay. National sovereignty. We need to bolster and defend the islands of liberty, which are mostly in the West at this point, and a lot of them are in pretty shoddy condition. So we need to really empower these, and then when we can see the benefits blooming and flowering in these countries, then other countries around the world will be tempted to start to emulate that. And then one day, when the whole world or most of the world is liberty conscious and liberty respecting. And embodying liberty, then we could have a global government. That would be fine, probably, yeah, it seems, we could be a good thing actually to get in there while we've got that power, create this system and built into it that, there's no top-down control. It's all very minimalist. Maybe if two countries start trying to go to war, there might be some intervention thing from the top, but at present, it's a very clear danger of dictatorship and basically just, tyranny and injustice if we allow this global government or the EU or the WHO or, the UN or whatever to, or Davos and WEF to get like this, or the central banks or whatever, this unchallengeable global power. So, Gaelic awakening. The other side of it, of why I chose Gaelic there, is that to reconnect, I think in the age of modernity, we're a bit like a tree that's grown so big and beautiful that its roots are not deep enough to support its mass. And so it's in danger of toppling over, like if there's some storm comes along, And so we need to deepen our roots. And we don't want to chop off the branches and become, we don't know. It's like, yeah, it's beautiful that in the age of modernity, we're so out there and able to consider all these things and da 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 da. But we need to be grounded. We need to be balanced. And so we need to, I think, with me, right, I'm born and raised in Australia, but I understand, I take the big view of history and I see, okay, my family, I was born a few years after my parents had moved to Australia from Ireland. And I was raised in Australia under the influence of my parents, who are Irish people, you know, but they're being influenced by Australia too, sure, whatever. But this, you know, thousands of years of influence which are coming to me through my parents. And then, you know, on holidays to Ireland, and I'm talking to my cousins and whatever, you know, my grandparents and uncles and aunts. And then, you know, moving to Ireland, you know, just realizing like I resonate with Ireland so much more. Then I kind of understand like, oh, there's, I'm part of this very, very, very long thing through time, which is called the Irish, you know. And I'm Australian also, and I love Australia. But you know, the Gaelic thing is, in my own self, I see I am Jamie, but I'm also McGlue. I'm also Ireland. I'm also Europe. I'm also humanity. I'm also animal kingdom, or mammals. I'm also animal kingdom. I'm also Gaia. You know, I'm part of these things, right? And I'm not separate from them, right? And so we need to touch base with our deeper identity. And then ultimately, like, we are the whole universe. It's not like, oh, I'm God and you're not. It's like, no, we're all God, you know? And we're not in touch with that wisdom of like the divine vision completely, but we are God experiencing itself as the little branch, the tree experiencing itself as the little branch or the little twig at the end of the branch. So Gaelic here is also used to try to like, look, we're Irish, but let's use the more old-fashioned word just to kind of really make the point. And some people you might think, like I kind of thought like, oh, Gaelic, isn't that a bit old-fashioned sound? What are people going to think? You know, like, what do they think? Ah, you know, and but it's like, well, yeah, it's a beautiful word and beautiful idea. And this is our people, the Gaelic people, you know, and we have Gaelic sports, you know, the Gaelic Irish, you know, or Irish Gaelic, Gaelic, or I think in some parts of Ireland they even call it Gaelic in Gaeilge. You normally say Gaeilge or Gaeilge. But yeah, and so just an understanding of like, yeah, that we can be moderners and we can be cosmopolitan citizens of the world, and that's all cool. But we also need to be balanced and understand who we are, that we are part of this tribe. We have influences upon us through our families, culturally, genetically, and you know, that we should respect these, and we need to understand where we've come from so that we can heal and we can learn the lessons that our people have been granted. You know, the people of Lesotho, they have other lessons that they can learn, or the people of Germany or, you know, Mongolia, whatever, they all have other lessons they can learn. Mongolia, don't do that to Baghdad again, for example. And so there's a certain, yeah, going deep and understanding where we come from. All right. So let's speed along here because that's probably been taking enough time. Thank you for joining us here. I appreciate your awareness and your devotion to, you know, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to help, basically. You know, are we going to help? Well, yeah, we're definitely. If we're trying, we're definitely going to help to some extent. Do I know everything? No. Is most of what I'm saying here right? I think so. But I don't know, you know. But what else can you do? If you don't trust yourself, you're useless. You're less than useless. You're just going to confuse everyone. You need to question yourself, but you need to and keep yourself as accurate as you can in your beliefs and behavior, aligned with, you know, harmony. But you have to put yourself forward and say, hey, this is what I think. And you know, you can by doing that, you can improve over time, you know. So we have to try, you know. Everyone else is in the same boat, you know. No one else in the planet knows everything either. We have to try to figure out together through free speech. So this brings us to the three main policies here: free speech, fair borders, full sovereignty. Free speech, like, okay, you can say whatever you want to say. If you're like, oh, let's go kill George, okay, that's now getting into contravening, you know, violating life, liberty, and property, right? So we're back to that basic thing of like, oh no, you can't do that. But if you're like, George is an asshole, or George, you know, deserves, I don't want anyone to punch him in the face, but George deserves to be punched in the face. All right, that's a little blurry there, but okay, fair enough. You made it clear you don't want anyone to attack him. If that's genuinely your intent, you're not like winking or something, then okay, you're just being offensive. But hey, that's not attacking life, liberty, or property, right? So you have the right to do that. You have the right to be wrong. You have the right to be vulgar, whatever. Because we need free speech. That's the mechanism by which we figure out what the problems are, what the solutions are, and what the best approach is. So we need, if we don't have free speech, we can't even figure out how to solve all the other problems. So this is the bedrock. We need it. Fair borders, like you, there's no country if there are not borders, right? You need to, you know, and even look, naturally, human beings, we have animal instincts. And a lot of people in the world, unfortunately, they've been through a lot of trauma and a lot of distress and a lot of, and even now, really heinous situations. And a lot of those people, they don't have, some of them will have more enlightened views naturally. Like some people are always a bit more loving, or more empathetic, perhaps. But naturally, so many of these people are going to be quite careless to outsiders. They're not part of my family. I'll kill you if it's needed to get ahead or whatever. Or like, oh, you're not part of my nation. Okay, well, I'll commit fraud against you, and I don't feel bad because it's like, oh, you're from a rich country. You can deal with it. There's all kinds of weird neuroses and mental kind of sicknesses that can come in when people are through trauma and terrible situations. And so if we just open up the borders to everyone in the world, these islands where you've got this more advanced culture where people have, it's been, for whatever reason, people have been able to come up and become more conscious and become aware of these ideas of how to run a society fairly. A lot of these places like Ireland or whatever, the USA, you know, where we, maybe it's not perfect, but and there's differences between them, but basically the West has been the place where, you know, within the West, it's been the most fair and the closest to these kind of liberty consciousness compared to other countries. Throughout time, you know, India, China at times, and we're very aware of this, you know, or, you know, wherever, you know, there's many Egypt, the many country, you know, civilizations which were more advanced before. But let's talk about in more recent history. And where we also have more records, we kind of know more in detail exactly what was going on. But so we must preserve some borders here, and we can through travel and through trade and through, you know, communication, we can influence other countries to come up to this level. It doesn't help, you know, the people, like let's say, I don't know, Afghanistan. If we're just like, I mean, that's a more complicated situation because of the history that's been going on there. But so let's just say, like, Pakistan, all right? If we just, like, yeah, let all the Pakistani elites, you know, like doctors, engineers, da da da, come to us, let them have a better life, then, okay, that's not so good for Pakistan, is it? They're putting all this energy into trying to get, for, you know, make progress, reduce corruption, kind of improve their economy, the standard of living, and all the people who could really. You know, just as that investment is about to bear fruit, they disappear to the West and give that fruit to us. That's not really fair, is it? And so, actually, immigration has benefits, right? I'm an immigrant, so obviously, I understand my parents immigrated to Australia. Now I've re-immigrated to Ireland, so I understand there's benefits for sure. You know, economically, but also culturally, for sure. Like I've benefits from the Australian and the Irish side from like the way I of my beliefs and behavior, but it's not always beneficial. Just like anything, right? Like fire can cook your dinner or burn your house down, you know. A bit of bread could save your life, but if you're eating, you know, kilograms of bread every day, you're going to get, you know, diabetes or something, you know. So everything in balance, and we need fair borders. Basically, we need balanced borders. At the moment in Ireland, that would be quite strict, I think, because we have been so swamped. The situation is very close to absolute chaos. We really need to basically say, okay, look. As it is, pause on immigration. If someone's already quite far through the immigration process, okay, sure, you know, they can. I would say, if I, again, this is just my ideas. I'm not in power, so it doesn't matter what I think, right? But on that level, but I would say, like, as soon we should pause, put a moratorium on like immigration, like on citizenships, right? But still say, yeah, you can travel here and work, you can live here, you know, that's all good. But say, you know, illegal immigration. Get real strict and just say like no more of this completely, you know, the Dublin three regulations, like, oh, your first safe country, and unless you're rowing across the Atlantic, that's not going to be Ireland, right? And Ireland's had enough of problems in history. We don't need it. Other countries can deal with these things. It's not right next to us, you know, like I don't know, say Fiji or whatever isn't dealing with it. It's like they've got their own situation somewhere, right? We've got our situation, and look, We've already taken in so many people. So, okay, enforce these regulations, Dublin three. So, if you're coming from Africa somewhere and you get to Spain or France or whatever, that's your first port of call. And if you're a genuine refugee, good, you're in safety, right? Your family is safe. You got what you wanted, you know? We can help these kinds of countries by providing some funds to help do that. But, you know, it's not right that we're just like a very small country and just taking all these people from all over the world, the vast majority of whom seem to be opportunists. Where, and, you know, like, look at the, say, people coming from Georgia to Ireland, like, there's a 95 or 99% rejection rate of the asylum seekers in, I think, in France and Germany. That was there were the rates, something like that. And then in Ireland, it's like 11% rejection rate. So there's a huge number of people coming here, you know, where they shouldn't be. And I've taught some Georgians, and they were really lovely people. And maybe five Georgians or something I taught. And and I think there could be. So again, it's like we don't have to demonize anyone. It's like they're getting the best they can get in a situation. Of course they will. That's, but it's our government's fault, not these people's fault. It's our government's fault for letting this happen. You know, setting these rules. Like, yeah, everyone can come in, right? So we don't need to hate anyone. We don't need to hate the illegal immigrants. We can just say, okay, you have to go home. This is our home, you know, and we have a lot of going on here. And the big thing is, like, look, even with legal immigration, like, you know, it changes the culture, right? And a lot of these people are coming from countries where, you know, like, this is a very big conversation. I won't get fully deep into it. We'll do that in a future episode. But one thing is, basically, we need a peaceful revolution against our government, right? Or, like, we need, and again, not us against them, not, you know, hating anyone or, like, you know, hurting anyone, but no, like, look, we're all Irish, and but the system is way out of balance. We need a peaceful revolution. We need to completely overhaul this thing and reset it to what it's meant to be, right? Get the corruption and the cronyism out of the system. Bring in liberty and basically shrink the government to like a healthy level. And a lot of people are coming from other countries. They're focused on, you know, getting ahead for their family. Their culture might be that, you know, like, oh, well, you just kind of let the government do what they want. You know, they're corrupt. That's just the way it is. In our society, it was like we didn't tolerate that. It's like, no, it's, you know, the Gardaí are policing by consent. The government is supposed to be different to the 800 years we endured from the British. There's a different culture and a higher standard, kind of strictly applied. So I think we really need to get our house in order and say, look, God bless you, everyone. We're very charmed that you like to move to Ireland. But Ireland, right, we have some stuff to deal with. So we're putting a pause on that whole, you know, moving in and becoming Irish thing, you know. Maybe Irish diaspora could be an exception because of, like, the history. Of course, I would say that. But, you know, but, like, and then over when this is sorted, we could return to, like, a more moderate immigration policy as, and maybe for working purposes, companies where they can't get workers and they need it. Some exceptions, reasonable, you know. But that fair borders, right? Full sovereignty. So, you know, the WHO wants to bring in this pandemic treaty where they can just, you know, say, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to control the medicine supply. And, oh, you know, this one won't be available. And, oh, we can declare lockdowns and tell people to stay at home. And it's like, excuse me, who are you people? And I don't think the 1916 leaders would have really agreed to this plan. And I don't think we should either. And or the EU. It's like in the 1970s, the Irish signing up to, you know, the European Economic Community, that was like a trade network. If they could see blast into the future, this is what it's going to become. Almost no one would have voted for this. They'd be like, what? They're going to tell us to, like, oh, we have to bail out all these banks that were, you know, fraudulent and stuff. And, like, oh, we need to basically put whatever law they write in Brussels, we have to. It contradicts, and if there's a conflict with Irish law, it's supreme. Oh, okay. And oh, and they're bringing this, that we're already crumbling under the pressure from illegal migration, and they're trying to force us into this migration pact, being voted on very soon, that would, you know, where we have to pay 20 grand per asylum seeker if we don't accept them, and that we have a quota to bring in like 30,000 more per year or something crazy. And just normalizing this thing of swamping our country with all these people from, you know, somewhere else, you know, or like the whole climate change, you know, laws bringing it, like, you know, like, oh yeah, you got to cull 200,000 cows, even after, you know, with a supply chain problems due to the lockdowns, which they also championed. There's potential food shortages coming up. People, a lot of experts saying like, yeah, it's a bit shaky, the system, and the Ukraine war, affecting grains and fertilizer production as well. And, and so this all, if the Irish knew that in the 70s, they would have been like, nope. And so, again, that's full sovereignty. Ireland needs to be able to have a balanced approach. Like, say with your friends, right? It's great to care about your friends and to listen to them and help them and participate in things with them. But if you just do what your friends tell you, then you're actually being a bad friend because you're encouraging them to kind of become tyrants and bullies. A good friend is one who stands up and will walk away and will even, shout at you if you're out of line, but will cares about you and will speak honestly and will walk away if you're no longer aligned, So we need to be a good friend to the other nations of the world and the other nations of Europe. And so if the EU is a friend circle, which is turning into some bully network where there's some, smarty pants boss, bossy, friend who's at the head, then we can speak our truth and say we have to change this. And if they're not willing to change, then we have to leave. It's that simple, our ancestors, so many people were in love and were looking forward to beautiful lives with those they loved, and they got a bullet to the head because they were standing up to protect those they loved. And this has happened for hundreds of years in Ireland, and it is absolutely disgraceful to throw that away to some ill-thought-out ideology coming from Brussels, or wherever it comes from. So, briefly about the whole thing of like, oh, is this an intentional thing or is it an accidental? Doesn't matter, right? We know these policies are insane, and so let's not get distracted on is it some coordinated thing or is it kind of just a snowball effect of different agendas or unconsciousness or whatever. Doesn't matter, right? Either way, we know what we need to do. What we want. Okay, so here we go. No and yes. No to the hate speech bill. No to the WHO pandemic treaty. No to mass immigration. No to non-Irish voting in Irish elections. So the British, of course, there's a deal, they can do it. But, local elections without a referendum, the government was like, yeah, we'll just let everyone vote. And it's like, no, you can't do that. That's, again, disgracing our ancestors. That's not right. No to making the Irish people homeless or slaves to mortgages and rents. So the housing crisis here. You can see all the details on the website here of, if you open it up, like what my reasons for it. In dot point form, so you can go into as much detail as you want, like the first series of dot points, or some of them would have dot points within the dot point, etc. No to using climate change to dismantle our economy and strip us of our freedoms, like the whole, killing all the cows, or like driving up energy prices and all this stuff. No to eroding military neutrality. So Ireland should be like Switzerland, like we stay out of the fights. No, thank you. No to future lockdowns, vaccine mandates, or vaccine passports, and telling the truth about, okay, the masks harmed us. The hand washing did nothing. It was airborne spread. The vaccines, well, they're actually genetic therapies, but there's actually, this might trigger a few people. But remember, you don't have to agree with me on everything, right? I'm just doing my best to understand what's right. I'm open to new information if you've got it. But I've looked into this carefully, and there's a lot of evidence of harms coming from these. Because they're experimental, they weren't studied for a very long time, and there's a lot of evidence. And it's this now. There's clear evidence of myocarditis, like heart inflammation, and other problems coming from the genetic therapies, the COVID injections. There's also death rates are up very around the world. In Ireland, they're up by 15%. 15%. So it's not 15% of the country is dying. 15% of the normal percentage of people who are dying, that's how much extra. But it's a lot. That's very unusual. That didn't happen. The pandemic didn't see that level of death rate increase. Not at all. It was actually pretty similar to the flu, a bad flu season, And so, what's that coming from? It's coming from something. What new thing came in that could be causing these? And it seems like, if you took the thing, now it seems like, and a lot of people are saying, a lot of experts, like it seems to be connected to these injections, and the heart inflammation. Now, luckily, it doesn't affect everyone equally. Some of the batches seem to be a lot stronger than others. So there's a good chance that, like if you didn't get, apparently, if you didn't get really badly affected, like, right after, then you're probably going to be fine. But like a lot of these people who have died, it's like they had some bad effects and then it kind of kicked in over time. And but yeah, but as a fact, death rates are up by 15%. So if that's not from these injections, it's from something. And if you know, if you have any ideas, please let me know, because you know we have to figure this out. No to a cashless society, digital ID and social credit score. No to importing identity politics into our classrooms, boardrooms, and public offices. No to indoctrinating children into transgenderism, right? Like, look, if you want to be believe that there's more than two genders, I don't. But if you believe that, that's cool. You can live your life and do that. you know, you, I'm going to give you that respect and say, yeah, that seems, you know, to me, I believe that's like, you know, like insane, right? If I want to put it in a very blunt way, but I just don't believe that that's true, right? I believe that's a misunderstanding. It's an illusion. There's only two genders. There's male and female. There's two sexes. So then an XXXY chromosomes, you know? And it has a big impact on your psychology, but you can be more a masculine woman or a feminine man. These are possible, but in generally, the males are masculine, the females are feminine. And it's cool, it's great. And it's a specialization of consciousness. It allows us to kind of think and behave differently, and it's complementary, helps us, you know, flourish. But if you believe, you know, that there's more, then I won't judge you. I'll say, okay, you know, that's your point of view. God bless you. I wish you happiness, health, and wisdom, you know. And but I would ask you to reciprocate and give me that respect and say, all right, Jamie, I think you're insane because you think there's only two genders, but I genuinely think you're under an illusion, but I respect you, and I'll say, God bless you. I wish you happiness and health and wisdom and what, you know? So, and if you're not willing to do that, then maybe that's a red flag that actually you're part of a kind of cult and an ideology, and that it's demonizing the heretics, you know, and validating the pious, those who really try to advocate it and evangelical about it. But definitely, the vast majority of society believes there are male and female, and so that should be in public institutions like, you know, schools, you know, doctors, you know, hospitals, and the government, the military, and all this. We should respect the mainstream view. That's democracy, right? I think, you know, if you want to open a private school where you have to the teacher stand up and say, yeah, I'm Mrs. O'Reilly, and I'm a she her, then cool, do it. You can open that. But the public schools, and they're trying to bring this into the public schools. They've already been told, the education board saying you should introduce your pronouns, which is saying like you believe in this whole thing of like that, you know, you can choose, you know, that's like through a back door. You're already admitting that you think there's more than two genders if you're saying that. And so that's wrong, because that's most people don't believe that, and you're confusing the children, you know. So you can see the details of my argument here. You can also download the PDF of this at the top here. All right, let's see. No to central banks and their government underlings stealing our money via inflation. So this one's a little spicy, okay? Because basically the core of the whole corporate control of our society, where we've gone away from true capitalism towards this kind of socialism for the super rich and to some extent for the middle class. But the core of that is that the government is controlling money, or more accurately, central banks are controlling the money supply. And you know, as someone once said, you know, or seems to have said, I don't care who whoever controls the money supply controls basically the country, you know. You know, these people who are in these systems, you know, you could read the book The Creature from Jekyll Island that goes into the nature of the Federal Reserve. But oops, spilled this. Basically, there's a good argument that there's a lot of deception going on with the central banks, and they're not what they seem. And but at the end of the day, the crux of it is by printing all this money and lowering interest rates a lot, and then raising them. But basically, printing a lot of money, they balloon up the economy, and it causes a bust. But during the process, those people who are connected to the government or the big banks, they get access to this easy money. It's for free for some of them, while the rest of us just have to hope to get some trickle down benefit. But then the biggest problem is that if they increase the money supply by 10%, they're decreasing your savings by 10%, right? And so, you know, That's a whole other kettle of fish. We'll get into that later. But basically, long term, not like right now, that would be one of the later stages of this thing. We can bring a lot of benefits just by addressing other stuff first. But long term, some sort of reform there is needed for sure. So, yes. Okay, what do we want? Yes to lowering taxes, regulations, and government spending by 80% within a decade, as I said before. Yes to renegotiating our relationship with the European Union and its corporate owners. Corporate owners, if you don't believe that, think about what happened during the 2008 crisis and like, oh, all these banks, they caused all these problems. They were lying, a lot of them, and yet, oh, the taxpayers are going to foot the bill and with no assurances of any changes, and there were no changes in the behavior of these institutions. And basically, they instead of solving the crisis by letting the bad players take their bad debts with them, they kept them in the economy, and now we still haven't solved the crisis, and it looks like it's about to pop up again in the near future because the financial crisis was never properly solved. There's a lot of evidence. If you look at the way it works, all their policies benefit corporations and harm the middle class and the poor. It's this big kind of fusion of corporations and the state. But there's some benefits to it, I'm sure. And I think, again, I would prefer to reform it into something where it's like, and one single reform would do it, where you say, when there's a conflict between national law and EU law, national law is supreme. And so you could have these EU directives that go out, and then if some countries want to have a different thing, they're allowed to, I think that would be a much healthier thing, and that would balance out the top-heavy nature of the EU. But if they're not willing to do that, then okay, it's a toxic relationship, and we have to leave, So, yes to an Irish Bill of Rights to empower the individual against government overreach. So basically, you could call it maybe a natural liberties or whatever you if you want to use a different term, whatever. But basically, like kind of USA style. A list of things just to protect in bedrock of the law, like as constitutional amendments. The government is not allowed to do this, 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 this. The people have this inalienable rights. And I think we really need that because the government has been spreading so much. Yes to closer ties with nations, organizations, and individuals who respect liberty. So maybe like, Switzerland or Argentina under Milei or whatever, like. Or Liberland, or whatever, this tiny little micronation that's starting up. Anyone who wants to, because, in working in groups, we can get more legitimacy and we can get, the mastermind effect of, greater ideas, more motivation, more belief, and just generally, humans operate better in groups. We can achieve things more powerfully. Yes to encouraging the formation and growth of families. So, the whole thing of like, oh, yeah, you shouldn't have kids, it's bad for the planet. No, birth rates are plummeting and it's very, very dangerous. We really need at least a stable birth rate, if not growing. And so I think, you can see the details there, but like one big thing would be talking to going to schools to kids and teenagers and just talking to them about it. Like, do you want kids? Why or why not? And then, okay, if and then imagine yourself when you're 50 years old. Okay, if you have kids, what will you do? If you don't have kids, what will you do? And just imagine it and say, oh, and what if all your friends have kids and you don't? What are you going to do? Just think it through. And so they're not caught out being like, oh, when I was young, I thought kids were stupid, but now I'm the only person who doesn't have kids and I can't find someone and I'm just so alone. And you have to think these things first. We don't want to lock people up into some terrible fate. But at the end of the day, everyone should be free to do what they want. We're not going to, we shouldn't force people to have kids, But I think from having a child, like it's really beautiful and it's difficult in some ways, but it makes everything happier. And it's a funny thing, and it connects you to humanity more. Like you can understand your parents better, you can understand other people better, just understand everything that's going on better. It's like until you've actually, you can read all you want about honey, but until you've actually put it in your mouth and tasted it, you don't know honey. And so you don't know honey. And so having kids is a way to really kind of know what you are, because you're a kid, you were a kid and you are someone's kid. And so it's a kind of a self-actualization thing that's very natural. And you're giving the gift of life to future generations. And life's wonderful. It's difficult at times, but there's so much beautiful stuff in this universe. And so, you're giving that gift. Think of all the happy moments you've ever had in your life, all the laughter, all the delicious food, all the interesting conversations, whatever it is, natural beauty, music. You're giving that gift to whoever you bring into the universe. And I believe it more than pays off suffering, you know. And through spiritual awareness, you know, kind of spiritual awakening, go read The Power of Now, basically. And there's many books on it, but that's, I'd say, the one I recommend to get to the crux of it. Through just kind of fully accepting the present moment, becoming aware of who you are as pure consciousness, suffering ends. And you're just, you're in the kingdom of heaven on earth, you know. So, okay, yes to reviving Gwaelga, our worthy traditions, and the consciousness of the poets. So I go into why, you know, I'll talk about this more in this episode's been long enough, but I'll talk about this more later. But basically, you know, getting into our roots, reviving the best of tradition, and especially our language. Irish is certainly far, far more than useless. It's there are practical benefits to be able to speak a language no one else can understand, for like subtle communication. If, you know, even if, say, Irish travelers are abroad, you know, to be able to, like my cousin was saying, you're in a cab, you know, with some driver, and they all got a bad vibe, and they've been like, you know, a Chorja, near Shagamar, you know, and we'll Carthagem, like, yeah, Misha Fresh, near Shagamar, okay, Tamish, Anish, Rulshivray, okay, a Haina Doetry, poof, you know, they're like, oh, okay, like, this is bad, you know, like, yeah, should we get out of here? Yeah, okay, here we go, one, two. And, you know, the cab driver's like, if it was in English, he'd be like, they probably knows English, you know, but they're, you know, and they suddenly they're out of there, you know. And, you know, there's a ton of situations where it could be useful. But then beyond that, you know, it would be good for tourism, and, you know, many other things. And just addressing, you know, like this feeling of shame and grief and loss that we've got in the psyche, especially in the Gaeltacht areas, that would be lifted and replaced with this feeling of pride and confidence and, you know, just joy, like, wow, we did it, you know, and it'd be a great success story for other countries, and especially, you know, say other Celtic languages. And then the most important is just that it's music. It's, you know, kyola us or hui hui hui, music from our hearts, and it's, you know, our ancestral language. And so I believe in our DNA and in our memory field, like Rupert Sheldrake would talk about morphogenetic fields. I believe there's a certain resonance that it has with us, Irish, and where it will. There's ways of phrasing things which are, you know, there's a word in, say, Dutch, gezellig, which is untranslatable. You know, it means something kind of like cozy or nice or social or good, but beautiful. But you can't translate it. And so, there's how many of them are there in Irish, like phrase words and phrases, where there's this certain connotation where it touches a certain, you know, little coordinate of meaning, which only it can do. And so, and it carries all the culture, it's of those who've gone before us. And so I think that's a beautiful birthright, and it's something definitely worth preserving. And if you like music, like, I, you say, well, why speak Irish? Well, why play music? You know, I love music, but, and it's not for money, it's just like, yeah, it's beautiful and it's uplifting, and that's like Irish for me. So I use Irish. The only Irish I got from my parents was Pogue Mahone from my dad. He wasn't saying it to me. He was just, you know, telling me, because it's kind of funny. And Cunis from my mum. She'd be like, Cunis. I thought she meant quietness, like with a Q. And then later I realized, like, oh, it's Irish. Okay. And, but like, I speak to my daughter in Irish, English, when I can't, you know, I'm sleepy, or I don't know how to say it in Irish, but as much as possible, you know. And, you know, not everyone has to do this, but it's a thing where it's like, it's beautiful. It's just, it feels fun to me, and it's just enlivening. And it's also, I like happy endings. So I like knowing that these people intentionally tried to get rid of this beautiful language that was full of this culture, which had given so much to the world, and, you know, revered nature, and, you know, it just has so much interesting things going on. And it's very beautiful, the sound of it, like Sean No singing. Oh, lovely. And there's a bit of that in even the way people talk in Irish, you know, and that this preserving that, and, you know, doing my part to let it flower at least a little longer, and maybe much longer. You know, that's a beautiful thing that I enjoy. But at the end of the day, it doesn't, it's not about the end goal. It's about, you know, the now, you know. And so right now, living with it right now, that's the main thing for me. Finally, yes to letting the Irish be Irish, humans be human, and government mind its business. So very briefly, there's one line here. So what does it say? We are as we are. Let's let nature take her course and trust each other to live freely. So basically, yeah, relax, take it easy here. Just like, let everyone do their thing, you know, and the world's gonna be much better. We can have this beautiful, technologically advanced civilization, shining towers of steel and glass, and but also the forests and the balance of the clean rivers. And we can have people speaking Irish and these traditional things, traditional dance. We can also have people, doing all this, techie, complicated modern stuff or whatever, cutting edge science or whatever. We can have all these things, but it's about balance, And so you can join the movement, click there, boom, and you can enter the form, seven little questions, and then you can sign up. If we go back here, Principles of Purpose, there's also a PDF, you can download this. This gets into something I'll talk about, I guess, next episode. But basically, it's kind of the broader thing beyond just the political. So, and look, if I'm the only one who does this, that's fine, because that'll have some benefit anyway. And I'm kind of codifying here what I've already been doing in my life, but like spiritual awakening, right? Waking up to who you really are. You're a branch on the tree of life. You're not separate. You're not in the universe. You are the universe. Emotional. So becoming more aware of my emotions and just being able to experience and express emotion in a more healthy way. For example, I used to not let myself get angry, and then I realized like, oh, actually, no, that's causing a problem and a block. You need to be able to get angry sometimes. If someone's doing something wrong, it'll come up and you can just guide it, and it can even give you the energy and the power, the bravery to do something. But there's, a right and a wrong way to do it. Or sadness comes up. That's actually healthy, but don't let it linger on, it's time to let it go. It's a messenger. Emotions are messengers. They come up to try to guide our mind to a field of, life, a little aspect to think about, and so, yeah, that's about emotional awakening, kind of waking up to our potential and the awareness of what's actually going on emotionally and what actually should be going on. Intellectual, about understanding the world and ourselves. Physical, kind of like, how, like the facts of what health and wellness really involves, and then actually how to do it, and awakening that, like in a physical sense, like actually becoming stronger and healthier and all that. Political, so that's what we've been talking about here, the whole political awakening. Economic, it's kind of connected, but basically, waking up your own, economic, like through potential, like that, you might think, oh no, the whole system's stupid. I don't want to do anything. Making money is stupid. I'll just put it into pints and tracksuits and just hang out, It's like, well, okay, fine, but maybe read this and you might get another angle on it, where you could see the beauty and the passion and the fun, and the meaning and the coolness of, like, actually, oh, I'm growing my own little corner of the universe. I'm a little gardener growing my own little thing here, and that's to the benefit of everyone else. And yeah, kind of just, and some practical steps for, say, like self-sufficiency, so that, if you're kind of stepping out on a limb like me here, maybe some people might be like, hey, what's that guy doing? To be able to kind of not be so dependent on other things, have your own thing going, and I think ultimately, the crises can come out of nowhere throughout history, and they have, and they always will. So, we need kind of to be as much as possible. If you can have chickens, if you can grow your own food, if you can have a job where you're not dependent on a huge bureaucracy that's going to force you to try to, they'll terminate your employment if you don't get some experimental medical procedure, for example, then that's all beneficial, So trying to, maybe find your own way, but it's just talking about, the kind of awakening to your full potential economically, and then as a group for us all as well as Ireland. Cultural, final one. So it kind of talks about Gaeilge and just the traditions and kind of, becoming reading poetry and stories and history and listening to music and playing music, writing, poetry or stories or writing essays or, speaking Irish, learning Irish, whatever it is, all kinds of things. Just getting involved in culture, we could basically say, is the beliefs and behavior of people. It's kind of like collective habits of perception and activity. And so, getting involved in what are the benefits of past culture, getting the healthy culture back from before, the genocide or, whatever, and get the best of things from other cultures too, all around the world. There's good things, but especially Irish culture. Embodying that in yourself and sharing that and helping being a good influence on others. Because at the end of the day, a lot of our problems, they come from our ways of thinking and acting. And so this is kind of full circle with the spiritual awakening, the cultural, that kind of feeds into our beliefs and our trying to awaken individually and collectively to wisdom and, to the good old way. So that's it. Right. So leave it there. That was much longer than intended. I'm shocked. This has never happened before. So please leave a comment if you've got something to say. Join the movement if you want to, whether you could be part of another party, you can be intending to vote for someone else. That's fine. It's all free anyway. But all you're doing is you're saying, yeah, okay, you've got, keep talking, Jamie, and whoever's going to, get involved in this. That seems reasonable. At least most of it I agree with. So, okay, I'll put my name down there. I need, once I have, the more members I have, the more I can get officially registered and then have my, on the election thing, my name and my, with the party name and like the logo. Just a way of kind of helping boost legitimacy for these ideas I'm talking about. And if I get into a seat of office, then it's making it even more ratcheting up to the next gear of how to get these ideas spreading so that, while we're all doing whatever we're doing, like, I got my teaching stuff, whatever, just like we can kind of start to reassert some sanity onto this situation, which is kind of careening out of control, you may have noticed. So thank you for watching and listening, and Gur Mí le Margaret gach banacht, and enjoy the day. Happy Easter. Much love.